this is the thing with me and all these other guys. Wins and losses and all this, it means nothing to me. If you're scheduled to fight a man and you've gone through build up and there's history and all of this, a fight is a fight and fights must take place. You know what I mean? You can't scurry away and not get the fights in that you were supposed to fight. That's my opinion of it.
That is Conor McGregor venting about the many obstacles that have kept the former UFC title holder out of the octagon for a year and prevented the one rematch he craves most. But this Saturday, McGregor returns to face Dustin Poirier, and fresh off an interview with McGregor himself, ESPN's Ariel Helwani joins us to parse the latest drama from the fighter whose nickname is Notorious. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, January 19th. This is ESPN Daily. Ariel, thank you so much for joining me, man. It's good to have you back.
My old friend Pablo, it's good to hear from you. You don't call as much, but I do get very excited when you do reach out.
Ariel Helwani has covered mixed martial arts for 15 years, and he hosts the DC and Helwani podcast for ESPN.
I don't call you much, but I call when it's important. And it's an important time in your life right now, in the life of Conor McGregor right now. You just spoke to him in a big sit-down for ESPN ahead of this weekend's big fight against Dustin Poirier. So how would you describe how Conor is feeling mentally right now?
So that's a great question, because I've been covering Conor since 2013, since right before his UFC debut. And I've obviously seen all the extreme highs and lows of his career. Of course, it's been a roller coaster, especially the last few years when he became this this megastar. Mm. This time around, had you asked me which Conor would be in front of me when I spoke to him, would it be the Zen-like Conor? Would it be the trash-talking Conor, the jovial Conor, you know, all the different iterations? I would have said it would have been the irritated Conor McGregor, the upset Conor McGregor, the Conor McGregor who had big plans in 2020 to fight at least three times, to fight Manny Pacquiao,
right,
to reclaim his spot as the man, the king in MMA, but none of that happened. Instead, what I got, Pablo, was I actually got a very relaxed Conor McGregor, a Conor McGregor who was like slouched in his chair. I've never seen him sit like this before. He was wearing a new custom suit, but he was wearing slippers as well, sort of like all of us working at home these days.
As always, Ariel, we focus on the positive side. I was ready to continue. It didn't go that way. It is what it is. I still have that inside me now. I'm still ready to go. I've kept up my preparations. And we're back, and I'm very happy to be back. 2021, we're going to replicate this. You know, again, I'm starting the year, first pay-per-view of the year, and I'm very excited about that.
He was very chill. He was very calm, cool, and collected. I don't know if I've ever seen him that calm before a fight, so I was pleasantly surprised to see that.
I want to get into how he may have arrived at that mentality, because it's been a year, Ariel, since McGregor last fought. That fight lasted 40 seconds. It ended with McGregor knocking out Donald Cerrone. So can you take us back to the aftermath of those 40 seconds? What was the expectation for what would come next for Conor McGregor?
So going into that fight, everyone was like, is he back? Is he still good? Can he stay, you know, out of trouble? All this stuff. And then he comes in there and completely, you know, wrecks Cerrone.
Oh! Return with about as many style points as you could produce.
Vegas is on fire. He gets on the microphone.
It's my name in history one more time for the Irish people, for me man back home. And look at the big smile coming out of my win. Thank you. Thank you, Donald. I appreciate you. The legend in this game, mate.
He's calling everyone out. The king is back. I mean, it's just an electric scene like only he can bring to the fight game. Had the opportunity to go in his locker room afterwards and interview him. And I would describe him in that moment as happy, excited, actually even a little emotional as well. I saw him get a little emotional, but not satisfied. He wanted to fight in February. He, in his mind, needed to make up for lost time because he didn't fight in 2019. He spent more time in legal trouble than actually fighting. 2018, he had the one fight against Khabib. 2017, the Floyd fight. So he wanted to make up for lost time. He was pushing to fight the following month. And if not, he wanted to fight in March. And then, of course, in March, everything changed. And what was so interesting about what happened in March was instead of being, you know, upset, depressed, annoyed, pissed off, like the rest of us that our plans, our big plans, our big 2020 plans had been derailed, Connor almost took it upon himself to act like a politician.
Wait, what does that mean?
So, like, Connor had a very close relationship with the Irish people, and they loved him, right? They had this amazing support towards him and this unwavering loyalty towards him. And in 2019, they kind of turned on him. And, you know, you can make a strong case that they were in the right to do
sure,
so. He
sure.
did a lot of things to really upset them, most notably punching that old man in the bar that was caught on camera.
Right.
And so in March, when the country is down and it's locked down and everyone's depressed, he's doing these presidential videos.
True lockdown must begin, and it must begin now.
Like, literally, you go online and he's standing there like a president telling the politicians what they should be doing.
We must close our airports. We must close all non-essential business. We must cut all non-essential travel. I want to call upon my people, the great people of Ireland. This fight needs us all.
And he started leading by example, and he started filming his home workouts, and he started donating millions of dollars in personal protective equipment and visiting children's hospitals. Like, say what you will about Connor in 2019 and 2018, he really was on his best behavior in the early portion of the pandemic and really took it upon himself to be this sort of, you know, beacon of light, if you will, or this positive role model for these people. And I think that he stepped up. A lot of people didn't expect that out of him. And I think it was sincere, it was genuine, but, you know, to try to give back to his community.
That's what's happening in the early stages of the pandemic. But then by June, what happens?
Initially, Connor was very serious about the virus, and he didn't feel like it was right to be training. But then once June, July started to roll around, he was like, look, everyone's coming back. The UFC is back. They were one of the first sports to come back in North America. There's the spotlight on the sport. People are talking about MMA. I want in. And he felt like he was being sidelined by the UFC brass. And that's when he started to get really frustrated. And it all came to a head the night of UFC 250 in early June. There's Amanda Nunes, the double champion in the UFC, featherweight and bantamweight champion. Remember, back in the day in 2016, Conor McGregor was the first ever, as he put it, champ, the first person to hold two belts at the same time. And as she's walking out of the cage, almost literally as she's walking out, he tweets, I'm retiring. Now, he won't admit that it has anything to do with Amanda Nunes. There's a part of me that feels like, you know, he's sitting at home in Ireland. He's seeing everyone glow about the current double champ. And he's like, and here I am, and I can't get a fight. What is going on here? And he just kind of put his hands up and needed to take a break and walk away. So he was very frustrated. The UFC has never said this to me, but I feel very strongly about it, and I will say it. I think they were waiting for fans to come back to have him fight because he costs a lot of money, right? And you lose a lot of money when you put on a fight with a guy like that and there are no fans buying tickets. So I think that they were buying time, waiting for him to come back and fans come back. He wanted to fight in an empty arena. He liked the idea of fighting in that sort of hollow environment. They would not engage, and so they just kept going back and forth, and he was starting to get very, very upset.
Obviously, there was frustrations because I was campaigning for a fight, and it was like I wasn't campaigning for a fight, and I was a bit upset with that.
But that was just the culmination of all his frustration as he was watching his peers fight and be celebrated, and he's at home feeling a little underappreciated and irrelevant in his mind because he can't get a fight.
So while all of this is happening, Ariel, and he's being sidelined and frustrated and in his presidential quarters somewhere, how would you describe Connor's relationship with UFC president Dana White?
They've had an up and down relationship dating back to 2016. You know, there's kind of a misconception that, you know, they're chummy all the time, but someone as strong-willed as Connor and who's not afraid to share his opinions and someone as strong-willed as Dana White, they're gonna butt heads, and they have butt heads. Every time Dana was being asked about Connor, he was saying, oh, he's retired. He put it out there. He's retired. Listen, no one believed he was retired. We all knew what was going on. It was a mistake to use that word, to use the R word. He could have voiced his frustrations and not used it, but Dana kept using that as the excuse, so he gave him an out. And Connor was just like, you know, he was upset. So in September, Connor just kind of out of nowhere posts a series of DMs, conversations, private conversations between him and Dana White, where he's proving to people like, hey, I wanted to come back. I was ready to come back. And Dana's saying I wasn't ready to come back and all this stuff. And here you go. Mm. And that obviously upset Dana very much because they were talking about another fighter in the conversation. This is why Dana says he's upset. He felt like it was a breach of the bro code, the man code, if you will, as he put it. And that really set him off. Look, if I did that, or you did that, or any other fighter not named Conor McGregor post that, you're in big trouble.
I would be afraid, honestly, yes. Ariel. I would be afraid.
And I wouldn't advocate for ever doing that sort of thing, especially as a journalist. But they now say they hashed it out. They're in a good place. And by the way, when I spoke to him last week, you know, I asked him about it, obviously, and he just kept saying, we're in a good place.
You know, we were at loggerheads, probably the most we've ever been in 2020. I felt some things were wrong. That were done towards me. I done some things wrong for sure. So, you know, it is what it is. We got it off our chest and, you know, we're back to where we're at and I'm very happy with that.
Did I mess up? Yes, but I was frustrated, he says. And it doesn't seem like there's that tension, at least right now.
I felt like I've got what I needed to get off my chest and I felt like it's been reciprocated well and it's come back. The other side has come back as well. So I'm in a great spot and I'm excited to come back.
The tension always subsides leading up to the fight. They're always in a good place leading up to the fight. It's in between the fights where the tension tends to come up. So we'll see what happens after this one.
So Ariel, I'm reading between the lines you just provided there. It sounds like capitalism, money, is what helped them bring this all together and make this fight in 4 to 5 days actually become a reality. Is that right?
To a degree, yes. I mean, I think everyone recognizes that Conor's the biggest star in the history of the sport. He's the biggest draw in the history of the sport. It's good for him to fight. He still has fights left on his contract, so he can't just sit out. He can't just go do whatever he wants. And actually, shortly after the DMs were released and all that stuff happened, Conor, being, you know, a good chess player in his own right when it comes to this stuff, threw out another tweet, this time to Dustin Poirier, and offered him a charity boxing match against Conor in Ireland. And once he did that, guess what happened next? The UFC sent Conor a contract to fight Dustin Poirier in January. They said, oh, you want to make a fight against our own contracted guy? Okay, how about you do it under our umbrella? And that got the ball rolling for his eventual comeback.
Coming up, Ariel shares more from his interview with Conor, including the fighter's prediction for Saturday and all the dominoes that may fall.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Ariel, Conor has seen a lot of controversy over the years, and that's putting it somewhat mildly, because some of it has been criminal. There was this 2018 UFC event in Brooklyn where McGregor attacked a bus that was transporting other fighters. There was, in 2019, felony robbery charges in Miami and sexual assault allegations that were investigated in Ireland. And in September 2020, there were these allegations of indecent exposure and sexual assault on the island of Corsica that also made its share of headlines. So, given all of that, where do things stand with the most recent alleged incident and his reputation?
An incident allegedly happened. His team vehemently, more so than ever before, denied it, like actively seeked every outlet to deny it, and nothing has come of it. There was no charges, no formal arrest or anything like that. He says the storm is behind him.
When you get in this spotlight and you're in this position, it's like there's a bullseye on your back, and it's kind of hard to take at sometimes.
When I spoke to him, he referred to himself as the whale.
I'm the whale, Ariel. The whale doesn't react to bait. You know, the fish react to the bait.
You know, he's got the Jake Pauls of the world coming after him now, and every fighter wants to fight him. And notice, he's never even responded to Jake Paul. Wouldn't even mention him by name. But like, the old Conor is taking the bait every time when someone comes after him. And to be honest, and it may sound cliche to some, I really do think becoming a father has dramatically changed him. He has two very young children. He has a third on his way. You can see how much he loves his kids. The photos of him and his son in the cage and the son mimicking him. It's great stuff. And I know you're a father as well. You can relate to that. Yeah. And I really do think it has changed him for the better, at least for now.
So for now, the storm is behind the whale. He is proceeding forward towards Fight Island. What did Conor say that he's expecting out of this fight in Abu Dhabi?
Well, he said that he expects to beat Dustin Poirier in under 60 seconds, which is a classic Conor prediction. Because, you know, he's been known, he calls himself Mystic Mac. He's been known to actually like hit his predictions pretty darn close, which is impressive. Dustin has said that he's actually hoping that it's a war, that they're bleeding. You know, Dustin's that kind of fighter. He's a bit of a throwback like that. He likes those battles. And I asked Conor about that, and whether it's just, you know, pre-fight talk or sincere, I actually believe he's sincere. Some might think otherwise. He actually said he would prefer a war this time.
You would prefer a war over a 60-second fight?
Yeah, I probably would, to be honest. I probably would. You know, I want to compete. I want to rack up the clock, you know, get some time in there.
He says a war for him might mean something different for me. I don't think we have the same standards.
I would actually relish a war if he can withstand the shots and get a pop, and let's get it going. Let's stand in there and let's fight.
So what are you personally expecting out of this fight then?
I'm expecting a fight that will last longer than the first fight. The first fight, off the top of my head, I think it was 146 that Conor beat him in.
90 seconds in, right in front of him.
He's talking to him now.
Oh, yeah. Mike. Having a conversation, looking to finish the fight.
It's all over,
just like that.
Wow. Conor McGregor is for real.
The real story here is, as far as the fight, the actual fight is concerned, Dustin has become a much better fighter, a more evolved fighter, a less emotional fighter. Going into that first fight, Dustin was very mad. He was angry. He wanted to prove to everyone that Conor wasn't on his level. We all know that Conor is on his level, and some might say that Conor's a better fighter than Dustin Poirier at this point. So I think Dustin will absorb the shots. He will hang in there. Ultimately, if you're asking for a pick, I think that Conor is the favorite, should be the favorite, and if he is on point, should win the fight. But I think it will be a closer fight, if you will. I don't think it goes 25 minutes. I don't think it goes the distance. And what I love about it is the first time they fought back in 2014, Conor had to beat Dustin Poirier in order to be considered a featherweight contender, to get that respect. And eventually he went on to fight for the featherweight belt. Here we are, you know, 7.5 years later or so, he has to beat Dustin Poirier to become a lightweight contender. So while so much has changed, there's no pre-fight trash talk. There's only respect between them. Conor's donating $500,000 to Dustin Poirier's Good Fight Foundation charity, which is an amazing thing that Dustin is doing. This time, all that has changed, but there's still the same story of Conor having to get by this guy in order to get what he ultimately wants, which is gold.
So with all due apologies, Ariel, to Dustin Poirier, there is this larger shadow being cast over this fight. And that's unsurprising to anybody who is familiar with Khabib Nurmagomedov and also what happened on Saturday. So explain to me what happened over the weekend and how Khabib and Conor's history is sort of rising again to the forefront, even amid this pre-fight week.
Yeah, and you're 100% right, because the biggest fight that the UFC can put on right now is a rematch between Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. The first fight that they had back in October of 2018 did over 2 million pay-per-view buys. No other fight has ever done over 2 million. I think the rematch could do 3 million or even more. So that would be, I mean, obviously a massive deal for the company. Now, Conor has to get by Dustin Poirier in order to be in consideration for that fight. As you know, Khabib retired back in October. And just days after his retirement, Dana White came out and said, no, you know, he was very emotional. His father passed away. He's going to reconsider, and I think he's going to fight again. And since then, there's been this sort of back and forth where Dana keeps saying, I think he's going to fight again. And Khabib keeps saying, no, I think I'm pretty good. I'm going to stay retired. And on Friday of last week in Abu Dhabi, Khabib met with Dana White. They made a whole big to-do about it. And then hours later, Dana White came out and said, at the top of the ABC broadcast on Saturday, I will announce Khabib's decision about his future.
Basically, the way that he feels right now is he's accomplished everything he's wanted to, you know, he set out to accomplish. These guys do something spectacular. Show me something spectacular.
Wow.
And make me want to come back and fight.
Khabib told him that Conor, Dustin, Charles Oliveira, any lightweight on the planet just has to impress him. And if they impress him enough, he might come back. So in short, we learned nothing. We learned that Khabib isn't for sure coming back or remaining retired. It was a classic bait and switch. So they're dangling the carrot. Conor would love the fight as well. Conor told me, he's like, look at this guy. He scurried off, his words. He said he scurried off knowing that I was coming back. And the reason he retired is because he knows I'll beat him.
I fought the best of him on that night. He fought the worst of me on that night. He knows it. I know it. His team knows it. I have the answer to destroy that man. So he can pull the wool over people's eyes for only so long.
So as Conor's trolling of Khabib goes, like, the idea that Conor has been arguing that Khabib wasn't actually, like, the champion due to some, like, sort of procedural, to me, like, almost like Mandalorian sort of rules about, like, when you may actually be deemed the rightful title. Explain that whole thing to me.
When Khabib beat him fair and square in October of 2018 at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, as you may recall, seconds later, he jumped over the cage and this whole brouhaha ensued.
Oh, and now Khabib jumps the fence.
No.
He's going right at Dylan Danis. Mayhem. Oh, no. Total chaos here. It looks like UFC security has corralled Khabib Nurmagomedov.
And it was a crazy situation, and Khabib's guys jumped in the cage and assaulted Conor, essentially punched him in the face. Well, because it became such a tense situation and it was about to really explode, you know, credit to the Las Vegas police in attendance. They did a great job. They never actually put the belt around Khabib's waist. So Conor's theory is because that moment never happened, he never actually became the lineal official champion of the UFC's lightweight division.
The unified title was never crowned that time in October 2018. Khabib fled the cage and left me fighting with his family members in the cage. The post-fight ceremony was never took place.
Just fascinating that he would even bring this up, right? Like 2 years later, he's thinking about that as his little shot to Khabib. It's funny. I don't agree with it, but it was a nice little jab, I will admit.
I still feel like I am the champion here, and I will go in and prove that. I'll prove that with my performances. And, you know, time will show. The cream always rises to the top and the world is about to see it.
Khabib is sticking to his guns. Khabib doesn't like Conor, doesn't like what he stands for, doesn't like the things that Conor has said about him and his family, doesn't want to give him that gift of the big fight. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't happen. I think Khabib will fight at least one more time in his career. I think he'll try to get to that round 30-0 number, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't fight this year and waits. He's still young. He's still in his early 30s. Khabib has more money than he ever could have dreamed of having. He doesn't need this. He lives in a very sort of modest part of the world, Makhachkala in Dagestan, and he makes around, you know, 10 to 11 million a fight now. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to double that and then some. But for him, it's not about the money. He's really kind of a different cat who came from a different background. I mean, for God's sakes, he grew up wrestling bears. So he's just a little different than the rest of us. But I could foresee him just saying, now you're going to sit on that L and we're never going to play this one out again.
What do you see the journey forward looking like for Conor McGregor? How would you begin to describe what occurs in your mind's eye when you imagine what's to come?
I think he will be very active this year. I think he will fight three times. I think there's a very good chance he wins the belt. I don't see it happening against Khabib because I think Khabib's going to take the year off and stand his ground. Perhaps I'll be proven wrong. And I really do think, I do sincerely hope, and I feel for now that the storm of the negative headlines and getting in trouble and the mugshots and all that is behind him. I think he has figured out how to be famous and act famous and live a famous life. And he had to go through a lot to figure that out. But I think he's now focused on doing good and being active again in his fighting career.
My friend Ariel Helwani, thank you for being our honored, very important guest on ESPN Daily.
Wow. Thank you for that, Pablo. Great to talk to you. And please, let's not go 6 months before the next chat, all right? Can I get the Bill Barnwell treatment around here?
Okay, up next. A soccer team with a name that would be a joke if it wasn't so dangerous.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. I was browsing soccer scores this week when I found myself doing this Looney Tunes-style double take at my iPhone, kind of unsure if I was hallucinating. But it turned out that there is actually a pro soccer team in Spain called Flat Earth FC. And it is the only sports franchise in the world, it seems pretty safe to say, that is officially named after a conspiracy theory. The man responsible is the club's president, Javi Poves, this former soccer player and avowed flat earther, who puts Kyrie Irving to shame. Kyrie mostly played footsie with this insane conspiracy, at one point asking why there is no real picture of Earth. That is verifiably, for the record, incorrect. But compared to Poves, who rebranded this team in this image 2 years ago, Kyrie is basically Copernicus. Many sports and news outlets have written about the Flat Earth FC logo and jersey and mascot and songs, and they're all about how our planet is really this horizontal plane with edges, and how astronauts are really actors hanging from wires, and how Spain's Minister of Science is really a liar. I found a video where the team's fans stabbed an inflatable globe with a knife before a game. But it's worth noting that a lot of this stuff, even the knife stuff, is presented with kind of a smile. The tone tends to be more whimsical and subversive than grave and menacing, which is apparently how some of the club's players can shrug off what amounts to a pretty disturbing reality. That their boss is using them, strategically, to spread a truly stupid conspiracy that at least some of his employees don't personally believe. Right now, Flat Earth FC is 4-3-3 in Spain's fourth division, playing in relative obscurity in Madrid, with the ultimate goal of promotion to the third division. Poves wants a seat at a bigger table, making for more headlines, and making it so that maybe one day you won't double take the next time Flat Earth pops up on your phone or in your feed. And that kind of normalizing, that kind of erosion, that passive devaluation of truth and science, that's proven to be effective and dangerous, as we should all know by now with the tragedy of QAnon America. Which is to say that Mr. Flat Earth FC is completely wrong about how the world looks. It's round. But he is dangerous.
because he does know something about how the world works. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.